Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, you guys. Happy Tuesday.
Happy day that ends in Y, whatever day you're listening.
Hell yeah.
Oh my gosh, look at me. I'm stealing your lines.
I love that. Please do it more.
Well, we are here. We are sitting on another New England drizzly evening, as is par for this entire freaking, year.
It's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It is. It feels like fall. It feels like October, which I obviously love. It's like my favorite time of the year, but it's not.
But it ain't.
And it doesn't feel right.
Don't rain on my pride parade. Thank you.
Yeah, in June.
Dude, this is a hate crime. Sky. Clouds. What are we? Washington? Are we in the Pacific Northwest? Why is it so rainy?
It is. It's awfully rainy. You know what? I'm like one of those people, like, I'm a card-carrying member of the Migraine Girly Club.
Oh, same.
Which is so fun because especially when you live in New England and like the pressure's changing all the times, you're constant, like super sensitive to it. And so you get migraines a lot, which is great. And so this whole like hot, cold thing we're doing, like I have whiplash and my head hurts.
Yeah.
So we have that going for us. So hydrate or dihydrate?
Hydrate, dihydrate, sometimes both, honestly, with this weather. It is, and I hate to say it because it is June, but it's hoa-hoa-ing outside.
It is. It's kind of hoa-hoa season.
It is, but at least it's warm. And, you know, like every few Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, we get some nice weather before it brings us right back to the storms.
Every fourth night, we get a day of sun.
And that's our punch card. So
we'll take it. We will. We'll take it.
That's what's pretty much been new here. We just had some yummy pizza. We have cake waiting for us for after this. I'm so excited. What is your favorite kind of cake? This is actually weighing heavy on my heart today. I need to know. We are having a lemon raspberry cake, but I realize I love every cake with raspberry in it.
Me too.
I think I'm just a raspberry bitch. You give me a dark chocolate raspberry? Yeah.
So my wedding cake was supposed to have raspberry in it. And I was like, ooh, yay. Because it was like, oh, do you want that? And we were like, well, let's say no for now because we can always update it later.
Yeah.
We like told our bakery. We're like, for now, let's say no. We're going to look because it costs more and, you know, like balling on a budget trying to, you know, like, is that really where that money should go or should it go to something else? So we like held off. So I wrote an email and I was like, we actually do want to do it.
Yeah.
We do, you know, we want to have that in there for the cake, blah, blah, blah. And then we cut the cake and we eat it and it's delicious, but there's no raspberry. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I'll have to let them know. I didn't send it. It's in my drafts. It might it might even still be there. So,
you live and you learn.
But I love a cake with raspberry in it.
Yeah, I love cake. I just don't like frosting. And I thought for a long time I really didn't like cake, but I just am really picky with frosting.
Yeah, because like if it's the super hard, like rock hard one, you know, the kind, it's just like, okay, that's too much.
Yeah. And if it's too sweet, it gives you sweater teeth. You know what I mean? You know,
it's so gross that I do.
And you feel it. It's like the second it hits your mouth, like all of your teeth are just like covered in sugar and it makes you want to vomit. And then sometimes there's the too much sugar where it hits you in the back of the throat.
And it's like wool.
Yeah. And you're like, ugh. So yeah. I'm real picky.
Do that
with
again. What's it like?
No.
Oh. Okay.
All right. I don't eat frosting because of that. I don't want to live that. I don't want to live there. I hate it. I will do cream cheese frosting if it is not, quote unquote, like not sweet enough, if there's not like 8 pounds of powdered sugar in it. And very, very, very specific buttercream. But I do like a moist cake.
Say that again.
Moist cake.
That's fucked up.
By the ocean.
I cannot do cream cheese frosting. I think if I were on an island and all there was cream cheese frosting, I would drink the ocean water.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I wish I did because it's on fucking everything.
Well, there's also different qualities of cream cheese frosting, but I hear you.
When it's too cream cheesy, I'm like, yeah, this is not a bagel.
You're like, why did he just spread that block of cream cheese on my cake?
Why are we here? Why did we do this? I love a chocolate. Like, I'm let's reel this right in. If an 8-year-old boy would like it, I would like it. You know what I want? I want a chocolate cake. Betty Crocker box will do you just fine.
Yep.
And vanilla buttercream frosting, like a thin layer.
Yeah.
When you don't ruin a cake by having, like, cupcakes to me are so challenging because it's like they're equal parts frosting and cake. I don't want that.
No, I want, if I could get like the pretty little cupcake swirl, but like if we had that ratio of like cupcake to like maybe a third of the icing that's on there,
mm-hmm.
you take the bottom off the cupcake, put it on top, eat it like a sandwich, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's arguably the way to eat a cupcake.
Yeah. That being said, I don't know. Most cake is good to me, but I do have a particular love for lemon and raspberry and chocolate. Not well, all at once, but...
You're in for a surprise.
Oh.
By that, I just mean it's lemon and raspberry, and it's in the fridge right now.
Oh, I'm so pumped. So, yeah, guys, we got to get on to this. So, chop, chop.
So, you guys hungry now? So glad we could help.
I got goods. I guess, let's see, what else do I have to yap about before we get all the way in? I don't know. You guys, my cat licked his butt on Teams today. So I was on a
Newton.
I was on a work call and he threw that leg up and he threw that head down and they were like, sir, this is a Wendy's.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Abby does work at a Wendy's.
Yeah. I plug in all of the data for a Wendy's. But yeah, I don't know. That's pretty much it. We had a fun little party this weekend.
It was very fun.
Ate lots of yummy food. I made so many dips. The Midwest in me came out.
Oh, yeah. She was crock-potting the shit out of it.
Oh, yeah. I made homemade buffalo chicken dip, which, dare I say, was one of my favorites that I've made so far. I also made a strawberry cheesecake dip, which I only say like that because it was basically my favorite kind of cream cheese frosting because it was like whipping cream and cream cheese, so it wasn't so dense. And we had the world's best French onion dip, which is Dean's French onion dip.
Oh, you made me get that once.
Mm-hmm.
It is very good.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. And out here, I can only find it at Target. So to Target we went. But that was fun. That was good. And then I had a rot day.
You need that.
Yeah, you need a rot day.
I also was at that party.
Yeah, you were.
I just got to enjoy the food. It was fantastic. And then the next day was a birthday party.
Yeah.
We were just chilling.
You had a whole birthday
thing. Yeah, it was a whole like birthday weekend. So
I realized I had 4 birthdays in a row this week.
Yeah.
What is it with June? What are y'all doing in November?
No.
November?
June, it'd be, it'd be 3 ahead. So
October?
October.
What are y'all July, doing in August? October?
No, it's September.
What? God, I don't know anything.
September-ish?
Okay.
September or October, I suppose, yeah.
Okay, never mind. I get it. It's ho-a-ho-a season. Edward Cullen's like saving you from the car. All right, fine. But like, it's a lot. Can you space it out?
They're putting in the work on Labor Day.
That they are. Yeah, that is. Labor Day, is that because it leads to labor? Or...
You're right. Yep. That is why.
That's why. Okay. Nice.
Glad we cleared that up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was a whole holiday. I had no idea what it was for. All right, you guys. Well, let's get into it because we've been yapping your ear off and I'm ready to go. So, yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Hey, you guys. Hi, hello, and welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Oh, wait, that's us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm bringing you something a little different today, a route that we haven't taken in quite some time. It's an unsolved case.
Ooh.
And you know because you clicked it, but Abby doesn't. So Abby, we are covering the unsolved case of Judy Smith.
Okay.
Judy Eldridge was born in Hyannis, Massachusetts in December of 1946.
Oh.
She lived in Mass pretty much her whole life. She grew up in a working class family. She ended up graduating high school and married her high school sweetheart after they graduated.
Oh.
But this marriage didn't last.
Oh.
He fled the United States, one source said to Sweden, to dodge the draft during the Vietnam War. Needless to say, they were separated rather quickly.
Got it.
She then married again and welcomed two children, her son Craig and her daughter Amy.
Aww.
But this marriage wasn't built to last either, and Judy found herself divorced and single and a mother of two. During this time, it seems Judy found her inner strength and proved to be quite an independent woman. And in a way, she was kind of forced to be. But she was also kind, loving, and supportive. Judy was a nurse, and she provided in-home care. And nurses who do this kind of work are actually sent from God. They are angels.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy was one of those incredible women who chose to take care of people. Like, her purpose here was to care and comfort for others. She was kind, loving, sweet. Her friend Carolyn said on an Unsolved Mysteries episode that I watched on this, that Judy, quote, took people into her life and made them better just by being who she was.
Aww.
She was strong and independent because much of her life required that of her. Judy was working in the Boston, Massachusetts area when she took on an elderly patient.
Okay.
This patient was recovering from surgery, and while she was caring for him, she met his son, Jeffrey Smith.
Oh.
The two seemed to instantly hit it off. They both were dedicated to their jobs, and neither wanted to jump into marriage too quickly, as maybe they'd had done that in the past. But for Judy, she'd had two marriages that ended in divorce. She wasn't exactly eager to get married again, and Jeff, who had also been divorced, shared this sentiment.
Okay.
For now, they were just enjoying their time together. They were in love. Jeffrey was an attorney, and she continued her nursing career, and the couple was just happy.
Aww.
They finally decided to take the extra step after dating 10 years.
Wow.
And got married in September of 1996.
Wow.
Judy was nearly 50. Judy's loved ones said she was happy with him and they had a good marriage. They were in similar places in their life. They were enjoying the quietness of it all together. I believe by this time, Judy's kids were adults, and I believe Jeffrey had kids, at least one child with, like, from a previous relationship that were also adults. So I think they were kind of in that empty nester. Like, they could focus on them.
Right.
And their priorities had been their families, and marriage wasn't super on the card, like in the cards for them for a long time, but they were already life partners. They just may as well get married.
Right.
They were obviously in it for the long haul together, you know?
They had the marriage, not the wedding.
Exactly. On April 9th, 1997, the newlyweds headed to Logan International Airport in Boston.
Mm.
Jeff was due to attend and speak at a pharmaceutical conference for work down in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right.
And Judy was going to go along with him to kind of sightsee and look around and kind of spend time with him when he wasn't working, but she could kind of make fun for the days that she had while he was busy.
Run the rocky steps, all that.
Do all the things.
Yeah.
After the conference was over, they actually planned to head to New Jersey and finish out their trip visiting friends there. So they'd have a few days, they'd go to the conference, she'd get to do some fun things in Pennsylvania. Then they'd head to New Jersey, spend some time there, and then they'd go back home to Massachusetts.
Perfect.
The two were at the airport when Judy realized she'd forgotten her ID and wouldn't be allowed to board her plane.
Yeah.
But Jeff was due to be at the conference, like, that day to be able to give a speech. I think he had, like, several speaking engagements is kind of what I could put together from this. So she said, you go take the, like, you take this plane because you need to be there in time. And I'll run home, get my ID, and I'll catch another plane.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what she did. He reluctantly went without her and boarded his plane and got there and got situated. And I think they just kind of agreed to meet at their hotel afterwards.
Right. Well, especially, like, you know, Logan, there's flights going out every 20 minutes pretty much everywhere, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And where he was on the time restraint to get there, I mean, she wasn't.
Yeah.
It might have cut into her sightseeing time, but other than that, it really didn't change anything for her. So she was like, you go ahead because it's important. You go.
Yeah.
I will meet up with you.
See in a few.
So his flight was due to depart a little after 1 p.m. And later at the hotel, he met Judy in the lobby. She was very sweet. She brought him flowers and she apologized for messing up their plans.
Aww.
And according to him, he was just happy to have her there.
Aww.
So he was like, you didn't have to do that. That's very sweet. But she was just all excited and like, sorry, we're supposed to ride the, you know, ride the plane down together and get settled in together. And she, I didn't think she got there till like 8, 9 p.m.
Okay.
So it was probably a long day for her too. So
that's sweet.
I know. So they kind of just had a night in.
Yeah.
They just headed up to their room. They ordered room service. They enjoyed their night because the next day was actually a big day for both of them. Jeff was back at that conference and Judy was going to Independence Hall to see the Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
So that morning, April 10th, Jeff got up. He had breakfast at the hotel. He went back to their room and they discussed kind of their plans for the day. I have a feeling he was up and at them earlier than her. He was had an earlier start. She could kind of take her time.
Yeah, she's on vacation.
Exactly. They agreed to be back at their room for about like 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to get ready for a cocktail event that was around like 6 p.m.
Yeah.
So like, all right, meet back here. We'll go together. The day went relatively normally. Jeff got back to the hotel room about like 5:30. And he was very shocked to see that his wife wasn't there.
Hmm.
He said in the Unsolved Mysteries episode that Judy was the kind of person that believed to be on time was to already be late.
Yeah.
So the fact that she wasn't there was odd because she definitely would have made sure she had plenty of time to do it. But he didn't think much of it because they're in a new place. She doesn't know. She can't maybe estimate how long it's going to take to get one place to another.
It's also like, you know, the mid to late 90s. So it's not like you have your cell phone in your pocket. You're just going to send a quick text on to be like, hey, I'm stuck in traffic, or
exactly. Or let me just use my Google Maps to figure out how far away I am.
Yeah.
He got ready for the cocktail party. He went down to the party, but he kept going back to the room to check if she was back yet.
Right.
Because I think he thought, okay, if she gets back, she's getting ready. So he'll kind of show her where to go and everything. So he kind of went back and forth and back and forth throughout the night. Like going to the party, I think he had to make an appearance and kind of be there. It was expected of him, but he's like, where in the world is my wife? And after an hour, when she still wasn't back, his panic had really started to set in.
Oh, naturally.
Jeff went to the local police station and tried to enlist their help and report her missing.
Wow.
He was on it, but he was told it was a bit too early to report it. And really, by their calculation, she's only been missing like an hour.
Right.
So I can kind of see their point. Normally, I really take issue when law enforcement don't take missing persons cases seriously, or when they say it's got to be 24 hours or anything like that. That normally grinds my gears because the first 24 hours are really important.
Right.
But in this case, it was like she was supposed to be here at 5 and it's 7.
They're like, all right, bud, it's 2 hours.
And it's like, she's in a new city. She's sightseeing. Did she lose track of time? Did her, you know, watch die? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? You can explain away. And they were like, listen, we're not going to do anything about this tonight. If you come back tomorrow afternoon and you still haven't found her, we will talk.
Yeah.
Like, and we'll get started on this.
Which is completely understandable and also probably so deflating for someone who's that panicked about their missing partner.
Exactly. But like, they're Taurus.
Right.
And so it's like, yeah, she might not have her bearings on where she is. Like, she doesn't know if she was supposed to take a left or a right. She could have just got lost. It's still entirely possible that he goes back to the room now after going to the cops and that she's there.
Yeah.
Getting ready.
Exactly.
But because we're talking about it here, we know that that didn't happen. But Jeff didn't know that and the police didn't know that. Jeff was still just freaking out.
Right.
If she had a phone at all, it could have died. Which I do believe he did, like, she might have had a cell phone.
Okay.
But the capabilities were not at all what we call it today. So, I mean, I think he had tried to make contact with her somehow, I'm assuming with a cell phone.
Well, and also, I mean, the only thing that they really did better in 1996 was that the Nokia brick could get run over by a car and exist still.
Yeah, probably, but, like, survive a nuclear bomb. But right.
But with what towers? Like, with what cell service? Yeah.
And that was a time where not everybody had a cell phone.
Yeah.
In fact, like, some families might only have one and, like, share it.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear this referenced anywhere, but I also kind of imagine that with what they both did for work, it could make sense that they both would have a phone. He's an attorney.
Right.
She's a nurse. So I can see, like, they could each have urgent calls to make.
Right.
Granted, there's pay phones, but it's different. Someone needs to be able to reach you specifically.
Yeah, And I guess we are probably moving out of that beeper era.
Yes. So maybe that's the case. Maybe her phone died.
Yeah.
She certainly wasn't going to look up any kind of GPS directions. It's all still in the realm of possibilities, though, that he goes back, she's there, but she wasn't. The police, what I kind of take issue with is that they could have at least put out like an internal message.
Right.
To just say, like, hey, to all the uniformed officers that are out tonight, if you see a woman fitting this, you know, description.
Ask her name.
Yeah, call it in.
Yeah.
Without making it like a, you know, like to rise to like an Amber Alert, like missing persons. Right. I know that's for kids, but you know what I mean?
Just to like have the notice that like, hey, this was reported even though it's too early. If you see something weird, note it.
It's worth knowing, but they didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't do that. And again, it's been like an hour and a half. They are not stressing.
Right.
And Jeff's worried and he wants help, but I think he more just so like feels helpless.
Right. He wants to do something about it.
Right.
To feel better about it.
After feeling dismissed by the local police, Jeff set out on his own. Remember, they're just visiting the city for a few days. He doesn't have a vehicle. He doesn't know the area. Mm-hmm. Plus, again, 1997, he's not checking her location.
Right.
He's not able to do any of the things that we are used to being able to do. He checked the hotel room again, this time kind of looking like, did something look off in the room?
Right.
Because I think the police were like, well, was the room like trashed or anything? Like,
yeah,
she was, you know, she had been there. Anything missing? Like, what do we have to work with? And he was like, no, everything looked fine. And they're like, and she's only been gone a couple hours. He's like, Right. Yes. And they're like, okay. So now he goes back to the room and he's like, is something wrong with the room? And he's looking and no, nothing looked off to him. Everything was where she had it. Like, bags aren't strewn all over the place.
Right.
The only thing that seemed slightly off was that the clothes that she had worn the day before weren't there.
Hmm.
So that kind of led him to believe that she was wearing the same clothes from the day before. And her kids were like, yeah, mom would do that.
Yeah.
Which, like, I would do that. You're, like, you're just touring. Like, you're a tourist and you have a trip. You're probably trying to keep some clothes. Like, those are my flying clothes. And then I'm going to go walk around and, like, spend time in a city all day. Like, they're already gross. I'm just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're...
Those are your outdoor clothes right now.
Yes.
And if you're like me, you know it. Like, jeans do not go on the bed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I, for me, it's similar, but different in that it's like, okay, I'm trying to pack into like a carry on. I'm keeping amount of things that I'm bringing low. I'm going to bring some stuff that I know I can wear a few times without being like grammy or gross or.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So that makes sense to me. But so, if that's the only thing.
Which isn't weird, but he's like, is this worth noting? And the kids were like, no, mom would definitely like repeat an outfit. Yeah. So he's like, okay.
She's an outfit repeater.
Yeah.
Which same.
I was going to say, same girl, please keep going. But the rest of her belongings were there. So she hadn't like packed up her stuff and taken off.
Right.
So without knowing what to do and not knowing the area, he actually took taxi rides up and down the street looking for her.
Wow.
Trying to anticipate where she might have gone. He knew that she planned on taking like this guided tour through the city that day. And he asked the driver to drive the route of the tour buses.
Oh, wow.
So that he could look for her. The man was trying everything he knew how to do in a city he didn't know with no way to contact his missing wife.
Right.
And in this episode of, again, Unsolved Mysteries, he said, quote, I was fearful something happened to her, but I thought I'd be able to find her.
Right.
Her children, Craig and Amy, rushed to Philly to help look for their mom. They also hadn't heard from her. Jeff actually had his daughter go to the couple's house, so their home back in Massachusetts, and check the answering machine to see if she'd left a message for him there.
Okay.
So the daughter went. She hadn't. Looked into her credit cards. Nothing had been used. Judy was known to have her signature red backpack instead of a purse.
Cute.
And I don't know if this was just for travel or if this was just like her everyday bag.
Yeah.
But this would likely be the most identifiable item that she would have on her.
Right.
There were supposed sightings of her, a woman loosely matching her description with a red backpack. But there was also a homeless woman who lived in the area who strongly resembled her. And it's believed that many of these potential sightings, now that they'd kind of enlisted the help of the public and a few days had gone by and this was really starting to seem serious, these sightings were mostly attributed to being this woman who was homeless, who just like bore this striking resemblance to her.
So at this point, it's really escalated. We've gone a few days. I'm assuming the police have put out an actual missing person's alert.
Yes, he did
now.
Go back that next day and they jumped in, but there really wasn't anything. And there was no reason to think anything until more time had gone by.
Yeah, because it's a hurry up and wait at that point. So, wow. All right. This is
So
a lot.
Now they're having some sightings, but when they're following those up, a lot of them are in the general area that this woman who's unhoused is generally seen in.
Right.
And this woman spends a lot of time outside. She's around. So like they're going to have more sightings of her because she is always out and about.
Right.
And she looked so similar to her that Judy's own family like had a double take with her.
Wow.
So concerning, but also really kind of made law enforcement and really everybody question how legitimate those sightings of her were.
Of course.
If it couldn't have just been this other woman. But with no change, Jeff couldn't stay there forever. So he had to go back to Boston to go to work, which is terrible. And he wanted to stay, but obviously that wasn't an option for him. But even though he wasn't physically there, he did not give up. From his office at work in Boston, he faxed and mailed more than 9,000 missing person flyers to aid in the search for his wife. And he sent them everywhere from Maine to Florida.
Oh my gosh.
So he was putting in work. He wanted her name and her face out there for wherever she could have ended up. He also hired 3 different private investigators, but they all kind of reached the same conclusion. Like no one got further than law enforcement, and law enforcement hadn't gotten far.
Right.
She seemed to have literally just vanished. And for the investigation, I'm sure Jeff was a suspect. In fact, I know Jeff was a suspect. And he should have been. I mean, it's always the husband, isn't it? But in this case, I really don't think it is. We'll talk about it. I won't say that it's not possible because as you guys know, this is unsolved. So we are not going to get to the answer here.
Right.
But this case is still incredibly important to talk about. And it's still possible. We see it happen all the time that they could get it. So if one person hears this and it propels someone to say something.
Yeah.
Then.
Hell yeah. Let's keep at it.
Then that's absolutely what should happen. But.
He's not giving me, he's not acting in a way that's making me think he's doing any of this performatively. He seems genuinely concerned, genuinely worried, genuinely wants to find her.
Exactly. And I was going to say that word performative, like, comes up a lot for me, and especially in these cases where I am suspicious of the partner, where so much of it seems so calculated and like staged and performative. And so I think that he wasn't performing for anybody where he was trying to go up and down streets, trying to find where the tour bus was bringing people and like what all the stops were and where she might have gotten off.
And, you know, I just think about the sheer quantity of missing persons faxes. Listen, you put 2 up at your local coffee shop, maybe. Right. But like 9,000 up and down the entire East Coast.
And he was mailing them out. Like this man put in hours of work trying to find his wife, and all the ways that he couldn't be there physically looking, he was trying to make it easier for other people to physically look and have a reference point to try to do something. There are some times in these unsolved cases where, you know, technically the case is unsolved, but you all but know who did it, and there just isn't enough. I don't think this is one of the situations. I don't think we have any clear-cut direction that we're looking at. And it is confirmed that Jeff was at the conference all day. So he didn't leave that to go do that, if you believe when she went missing.
She is such a cutie. I just looked up photos, but
she looks like your aunt.
Yeah.
Your mom. Your teacher, your friend, your nurse, your anything. Like, she's just normal. And that her being normal matters. And we'll talk about it. She was said to have asked a hotel employee where to get one of those city tour buses. And they actually were able to track down the driver.
Wow.
Who confirmed that she was a passenger and that she had ridden the bus that day, and then he dropped her back off at the stop that was in front of the hotel at like 3 p.m.
Okay.
So really, she's only unaccounted for like 3 p.m. on.
Okay.
If you believe the bus driver. All of this is if you believe.
Right.
Which I do, but I will say this case, as strange as it is, there's so little information available on it that, like, I know next to nothing about her. I couldn't find an obituary. I couldn't, like, dig in to find a lot of this information that I wanted to find.
Right.
But this is, to my knowledge, how this goes. Okay. So we've got a bus driver that says 3 p.m.
Right.
And after that, we're not sure. Because there's these various supposed sightings, but each one, when tracked down, was either not her or just a dead end. And then, months later, on September 7th, 1997, 5 months after her disappearance, a father and son were hunting in the Pisgah National Forest in North Carolina when they happened upon skeletal remains.
Oh, fuck.
The remains were human, half buried, and animal activity had spread them over 100 yards.
Holy cow.
Police arrived at the scene immediately. The clothing on the remains had puncture and like stab wounds, and those wounds matched up to cuts into the bone, which ultimately led them to think that their victim died by stabbing.
Okay.
But with the condition of the remains and the fact that they had kind of been spread out, some of them were partially buried, but it was in by no means intact. It was really hard to tell if there were any other wounds that maybe they now couldn't see that could have contributed to the death. But
right.
As far as we know, we believe it's a result of stab wounds. The media got the story out there, though, that remains were found in this national forest and that they weren't able to identify them. But a doctor actually saw the news coverage and faxed the article to the Philly PD because he had seen one of the flyers for Judy.
Oh.
So he's reading this article about these remains found, and he faxes a copy of that article to the PD to say, I've seen your missing flyers.
Yeah.
Could this be the woman that you're looking for?
Does this line up? Question mark. Right.
Because we're talking North Carolina.
Right.
This is not in the same state. This started in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Very strange. So that gets those two parties talking.
Okay.
So North Carolina and Philly are like, okay. And then they requested Judy's dental records from Jeff, which Jeff provided.
Nice.
Those were compared to the skeletal remains, and it was determined that these remains were a match.
Oh my gosh.
So this murder victim that they've found hundreds of miles away from where she was last seen was 50-year-old Judy Smith.
Wow.
Also found at the scene was a lot of weird shit, okay? So first, there's this blue backpack. And there's sunglasses that were estimated to cost about like $110. This backpack and these sunglasses were also partially buried. And they also think it was probably buried at the same time as the body.
Right.
But she was seen with a red backpack.
Yeah.
Her signature red backpack. And now here's this blue one. But it wasn't buried far from the body, and it was kind of looked to be like the same depth. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Looked to be buried at the same time. And why would you leave expensive sunglasses behind?
Yeah.
Was this the killer's stuff? Was it a victim's? Like, did it belong to Judy? There was nothing identifiable on or inside the backpack that would tell you who it belonged to.
Right, her name wasn't like embroidered in the name tag.
Correct. Yeah. But there also weren't like receipts that could give you anything, but like there was winter clothing, which was odd, but could make sense if like you were going to hike because it can get cold overnight.
Right.
And this was like in a national forest, like this is along some pretty desolate spaces.
Right.
The body was also found to have had $167 with it and a diamond wedding ring.
Wow.
So whoever killed her left her ring and left cash, which really leads you to believe that this motive wasn't robbery.
Right.
However, her wallet wasn't there. So her ID isn't there, which obviously would have made it a lot easier to identify her. That didn't happen.
Right. And I could see them taking that just for the identification purposes if they're leaving sunglasses, and the rest of it.
But why would you leave anything? Why wouldn't you just take it?
Right.
And this was weird, like really weird. Her body was found like she was wearing hiking clothing, but this was clothing that nobody who knew her could recognize, meaning maybe she bought it later.
Yeah.
But this is new clothing. This is not what she was last seen in. There's the obvious point here. She was 600 miles away, or 900 kilometers, if you're wondering. And their plans hadn't included North Carolina.
Correct.
No ID. So again, who took Judy's ID? But then she still had cash on her. So like you took the ID, but you left the cash. Mm-hmm. So you just didn't want her identified, but you didn't want to benefit from this financially, which is unfortunately a motivator in a lot of crime.
Right.
And when she left, she had about $200 cash on her, and the $167 was found with her, plus her ring and the expensive sunglasses were nearby. So again, not the robbery, but also in those days that she was missing, she spent $33?
Yeah, in 5 months, she got an entirely new outfit, presumably a new backpack.
Well, we think that she was killed very recently when she went missing. Her body was just found so much later, but like, say it's a week.
Right.
How do you, you can spend $33 in a day very easily, like just for your basic needs to be met. So how did she make it work? Because her credit cards weren't used and she only had a finite amount of cash on, and most of that was found with her.
Right.
So say it's a week, you've stretched $33 to last a week. Now I know that inflation has done us some damage here in 2025, but even in 97, $33 wouldn't, you're not going to get a hotel room. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Much less a week and new clothing.
So there's that. That's odd. Police began to investigate the area around Asheville, which is a town about a half hour from where her body was found.
I'm sorry. That's really funny to me, though.
Why?
Because you think someone just came up with Nashville. They're like, we got nothing better. You want to add an N to Asheville?
Could be.
Sorry, I think town naming is fascinating. Keep going.
Well, New England ones are so weird.
Oh, no, we're just lazy.
Have you been to Worcester?
Worcester? That used to be my party trick. People would just show me a name of a town. They'd be like, say it. And I was like, fuck you guys.
I know, because so your little Midwest brain couldn't handle the weird shit we named shit out here.
No, because you know what? We at least follow laws of language. Okay, I'm fine. It's okay. It's not that deep. I need to sit down. Just keep it consistent. But that's my only complaint. So they're looking around Asheville.
They are.
Okay.
And they're looking in this area because it's like, I think, the closest town to this national park where her body was found.
Yeah.
And then they found out that there had been sightings of her.
Huh.
Some seemed less reliable, like they may or may not have been her, but there was one that seemed to carry a lot of weight.
Okay.
But before we get into that, I just want to say, if you see something, say something. Even if you think it's not helpful, just do it.
Yeah.
When you enlist help from the public, like the police did in this case, and you have, you know, if you have any information on this person, or here is, you know, a general description, last known location, this is the clothing that she was wearing, this is like the color of her hair, like height and weight, you give that, you put that out into the public, you're obviously asking for feedback. And what happens when you enlist help from the public? You get different kinds of folks.
We
talked about this in our John List series too. And if you like what you're hearing right now and you haven't checked that out, I think you should.
Oh, you should.
Shameless plug. When people call in or report tips where it has been broadcast, you get people who reach out who are messing around.
Right.
The prank callers, people intentionally misleading for the hell of it, and others of the like. Those still need to be weeded out, though. Then you have the people who are lonely and know that if they call a tip line, a police department, or something else, someone will pick up the phone on the other end. Yeah. And they're just looking for that connection. And then there's the people who actually believe they have information that might be helpful.
Right.
If you're going to be any of these people, be that guy.
Oh, yeah.
So if you see something, say something, but do not be an asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know how many tips they received, but it's worth remembering that there will always be populations of people in all of these camps. and the first two can slow down investigators needlessly.
In fact, they almost always do because we always have some of them.
The tip that did seem most reliable, though, the one that seemed to carry weight, was from a store clerk named Joanne Stucker.
Okay.
She was interviewed again, and that I swear I had other sources too, but the unsolved mysteries part, it's so dated. It's so good. the episode on this case, she said that Judy had come into the store. Mm-hmm. They made small talk. Judy actually introduced herself to Joanne. She said that her name was Judy. She said that her and her husband are from Boston. He's an attorney.
Okay.
And that his work brought him to Philly for a conference, but that she was just sightseeing and decided to check out Asheville.
Okay.
So she went 600 miles.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Away from mm-hmm. where they were. But she is telling this woman.
Yeah.
All about their life, and accurately so.
Yes.
I just happened to come down here myself because I had the time to do it. According to Joanne, Judy seemed perfectly normal, appropriate, friendly, coherent. She thought nothing of her interaction with this woman was weird
mm-hmm.
until the body was found.
Right.
And she starts seeing the posters about this, and she's like, I spoke to that woman in April.
Yeah.
And this is what she told me. Another tip that came in was from a deli worker who said that Judy had come in and purchased 3 sandwiches and a toy truck.
Hmm.
Possible, but why 3 sandwiches? Who were the other 2 for? And who was the toy truck for?
Mm-hmm.
But now, could that be if she had the $200? And now she's down to $167.
Yeah.
Could the $33 that was spent be 3 sandwiches and a toy truck?
Possibly.
Now, we're used to sandwiches costing $20.
But I remember the days of a $5 foot long, damn it.
Hell yeah. So that's different. I don't know. Food for thought. Possible. But I don't think a lot of people put a lot of weight in this particular theory, this deli theory. But we're going to talk about them. But let's talk about more theories, because that's really all that we have. These are theories, speculations, guesses, and a whole hell of a lot of unanswered questions.
Okay.
So all of these sightings, it's kind of hard to parse out whether these were in Philly or this was after the body was found and these sightings were reported in the Asheville area or somewhere in between.
Okay.
I believe most of them are Philly.
Okay.
But worth noting that I can't definitively determine that.
Right.
However, some of these sightings claimed that the woman they saw in the Philly area, who they believed to be Judy, was disoriented.
All right.
Possible. Possible reasons for her being disoriented could be that she had fallen and hit her head.
Yeah.
Maybe she was in a car accident, possibly in a taxi. She could be under the influence of something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's others, right? Other things I'm thinking of. But if she hit her head and she was disoriented, it could make sense that she would wander around.
Right.
That she doesn't know the area and probably knows it less after a hit to the head. But I also challenge this. First, I saw no mention of a head wound in the autopsy.
Yeah.
And I'm just assuming that some kind of disorientation would need to be a wound to the head.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean if it... Because really, they just had skeletal remains. So yeah. Unless it was an injury that they could tell after 5 months of her body being in, the woods, in the elements, maybe that did happen, but they didn't believe that she died as a result of a head wound.
Right.
Or that was a contributing factor. I didn't see that anywhere. Possible, but I take that with a grain of salt, and that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But I also question the word disoriented, because how was that meant? Disoriented, right, in a medical sense could be, again, used to diagnose a concussion or other health emergency.
Yeah.
But if you mean disoriented as maybe not having your bearing on your surroundings, couldn't you appear disoriented if you're walking alone around a city you don't know?
Absolutely.
You're confused about maybe what street you're on, or were you supposed to take a left or go straight back there? Or where's that coffee shop that guy at the hotel told me about? And for me, personally, I'm so geographically impaired, you could drop me off three streets away from my house and spin me around, and I would absolutely appear disoriented and have a hard time finding my way home. So I question the use of that word. I want to know more. What do you mean? That's right. Just my personal take, because I could look disoriented if you drop me in New York City.
Right. Disoriented also, I mean, in any other context, it doesn't sound like they spoke with her, but, you know, in some sort of presentation way, it could be disoriented language, like jumping from one topic to another, or there's just a lot of ways to interpret that.
And also, like, there's no mention of any substance use at all. But I'll say that that's possible. People can be under the influence and think that. But I also think, like, okay, she's walking around the city. She's got a day to herself.
Right.
Did she have a drink at lunch?
Yeah.
Did she have maybe two? You ever have a Long Island iced tea on an empty stomach?
Oh.
Disoriented's putting it lightly for me. I'd be crab walking out of there. But important to note where, like, there are all these little tidbits of information that I could find, and there's really so little available on this case, but I still wanted to cover it. But I see so many possibilities that it's been nearly 30 years since all of this happened, which, as a 90s kid, makes me want to vomit to say the 30 word. But there is some truth there that a lot of these things can be looked at in different ways.
Yeah.
Just that one word alone sparks a conversation. And that's just what it did in my brain. So you can imagine what it does for other people.
Right.
I also wonder if the homeless woman they saw was disoriented.
Yeah, that's possible.
Because we're saying that they looked a lot alike, so much so that her family even looked twice. That now you have a whole other person who could have hit her head.
Right.
Who could have gotten lost. Mm-hmm. Who could be under the influence of any kind of substance.
Yeah.
And you're attributing that behavior to Judy because you think it's her.
Yeah.
So that's possible. Others speculate, though, in terms of what happened, whether or not she was disoriented or unwell at the time, that maybe this was planned. That maybe there was another man. And maybe she wanted to go meet him and planned to be back in time, but wasn't.
Mm.
But that doesn't really explain it, because she spent most of the day on one of those city tours in Philly. So she was like, she got dropped back off at 3 p.m. You think between 3 o'clock and 5 p.m. when she's supposed to meet her husband at the hotel that she's going to go meet some guy in North Carolina?
Yeah.
600 miles away? That's impossible. Or did she want to meet him in Philly and he kidnapped her and brought her? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different ways you can look at this, but you've got such a odd time frame.
Right.
And if true, say there is another person, maybe she was going to take a few days to meet up with them. Why wouldn't she just tell her husband she was going to meet a friend, or that she didn't feel well and she wanted to go home? I mean, she could have lied to him.
Right.
I'm not encouraging that by any means, but I'm just saying, if she wanted to cheat on her husband, if that's the theory you're going to go with, which there's no evidence to suggest that she would, but assuming that, wouldn't she just not tell him she's going to meet him that day at 5 o'clock? Wouldn't she come up with a plan?
Or, I mean, hell, I even think of, like, going back to get your ID and just being like, never mind, like, I'll see you later. It's not worth it. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like, here, I want you to be worried about me in 2 hours if you don't see me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This whole zero communication thing was so unlike her that it really makes you second guess so much. Like, was she really in North Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously her body ended up there. Did she spend time there? How long? We don't have an exact, like, death date. We don't know who did it. We don't know what we don't know. So she got there somehow, but when and why?
Well, and frankly, like, not, I mean, okay, trigger warning, because this might be a little bit graphic if you've got an active imagination, but if she's being dropped off in the elements, there's wild animals out there. I mean, we can have however many studies on people decomposing to say this is how far along you'd be in this circumstance at this time, but, like, it's unpredictable what animals will do on top of the elements, on top of it being summer. So it's not like everything's thawed over, you know, or not thawed over, but frosted over. Like, there is so many different things that could happen there. Her remains were spread out over 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge area.
Yeah. And most of it was buried, but, like, parts of her were elsewhere, which obviously led them to believe that it was animal activity, but I mean, her body was half buried, so it makes me not think that an animal is what killed her.
Oh, right. No, I don't think that. Especially with clothing, like punctures and the bone marks, but even just, you know, the amount of time that she's out there. It could have been 2 weeks. It could have been 4 months.
Yeah, but those punctures could have come from
yeah,
a bear. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's so many different possibilities here where it's like, yeah, could it be like teeth? I mean, I have a feeling they would have tested for all that, but what's left?
Right.
After so long.
I mean, hell, I don't know. It's fascinating to me that there's a seemingly credible source that talked to her where she explained her background, because in my head, you know, I know this isn't like the Days of Our Lives, but I think, I don't know, head injury, you're disoriented, you have amnesia, maybe you go down south, like you think you're going somewhere.
That's what people say. It's like some kind of amnesia thing where it's, and then she just kind of comes to, but it's like she knows everything else, but she just doesn't know where she lives.
Right. And that doesn't make sense. And, you know, if you can come to and remember all of that to tell someone, you can't use a phone, a payphone, a phone mm-hmm. in the store.
Or say, I don't know how to get home, but I know I'm from here and I know that this is going on. And then there's the other piece, and I didn't really see any other sources saying this, and I'm not like throwing shade at Joanne Stucker from Asheville, but she is the store clerk that said that she came in and had that conversation with her. But I also wonder how much of that information was available.
Right.
Did she just, some people just want their 15 minutes and say, well, I talked to her and she said all these things. And it's like, well, shit, you knew that her husband was an attorney and they were from Boston. And it's like, well, yeah, it's been on the news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like things like, I saw the flyer that said that. Like,
yeah.
I looked up her husband and found that out, or I made a few phone calls or something. Where I don't think that's the case, and that does not seem like a theory that anybody has, that this woman is not being truthful. Yeah. But because I've got so little to go on, I am suspicious of every detail.
Right. Yeah, there's like no new information or anything specifically informative that she might not have known. So I get that.
Just odd food for thought.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I think that's what happened, but I'm looking at everything with like,
Yeah, just a grain of salt.
Yeah. One of Judy's other friends said that if you were looking to find her secret man, you wouldn't find one.
Right.
She didn't have one. She was not cheating on Jeff. But she did also seem to think that it was possible Judy wanted space from him and that she took the opportunity where she saw it.
Hmm.
She said she didn't think Judy went to meet a man, but that she could have headed down to North Carolina by herself. And that she was also the kind of person who could make friends wherever she went. So it wouldn't be surprising to find that she'd made a friend and was spending time with them, like lost track of time and kept moving, which seems odd. And no one else said that about her, but this friend believed it and spoke up.
Okay.
She also said that she didn't believe Judy accidentally forgot her license that day at the airport.
Oh.
She believes that she wouldn't have forgotten it, that she wasn't that kind of forgetful. And that it was an attempt of Judy's to get some space from Jeff.
Okay.
So they get to the airport. Oh, darn, I can't board the plane. You're going to have to go without me because I don't have my license and they won't let me go on.
All right.
This friend said that she thought she could really benefit from that time and that things had been a little tense lately or tenuous. She said some like word, but it was like they weren't abusive. It wasn't anything, but like, maybe they'd hit a rough patch or maybe they had been fighting a little bit.
Right. Okay.
Interesting point. Possible. She definitely know her friend more than I would. But I did do a little digging.
Right.
Because I'm a 90s kid, as I've mentioned, so I don't have clear memory of this. But I've heard rumors, whispers of a time where airlines didn't have the robust security that they have now.
Yeah.
And that they didn't check IDs nearly as carefully, if they even did at all. And some wouldn't. I mean, you could have a non-photo ID. People were swapping IDs to rack up points. Like, we're going to talk about it. But all the flights that I've been on have been post 9/11.
Right.
Security and order resemble more of what it does today. But it's also important to note that we're talking about 97 and many of these rules didn't exist yet.
Right.
And many were starting to pop up. Like, there was this sort of push for more airline like security and safety, but also airlines were losing money because of some of like quote unquote scams people were doing where they were being like disingenuous. We'll talk about it. But I'm like, would she have needed her ID? Did she?
Right.
When
was
did
this
that
a need? Need?
Did
yeah.
this law come in? You know, what did this look like? So the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, began requiring people to show IDs more because, again, there was this financial problem for the airlines. People were buying tickets like when they were first available for a very low price. And then, you know, the price increases as you get closer to the departure date.
Mm-hmm.
So people would buy these tickets like up in mass.
Okay.
And then they would sell them close to the date for a profit for them, but still undercut what the airline was selling remaining seats for. So it was still a deal. And then this kind of messed with people's.
Got it.
Like with the airline's finances, right? Because so few were being sold at the higher end price.
Right.
And what would happen is you could just buy the ticket and then you could assign it to whoever. Or if you had to buy it under your name, you could give your friend your ID.
And then
they could fly, but you could still get the points or you could do whatever and still, it was fine.
Benefit off of that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. It came down to money. It always does. But in 1996 or 1997, I think, is when many airlines started requiring that people show a photo ID at check-in.
Okay.
So even if the FAA didn't require it at this time, they would have, the FAA would provide the absolute lowest point of security.
Right.
Here is your bare minimum. But these airlines had the option to do more.
Of course, yeah.
And as a lot of the higher ups in these companies were realizing how much money they were losing, they opted to do more. Now I think the FAA has really high, but at the beginning it was this is just what it is. And then these airlines were like, no, you have to have ID, you have to have two, you have to have everything. At a certain point, it was only if you were checking bags. So if you just had a carry-on or you had nothing, you didn't need to have a photo ID, but it costs more. So they started having you do that. But then people really complained about the time it would take to check into your flight and check your bags, because now they're doing everything that doubled the time. And so there was a lot of pushback, but they kept rolling with it. And because the FAA didn't require it, didn't mean, again, that the airlines didn't see the benefit to impose their own rules. And interestingly enough, I found this article written in December of 1996. So right at this time that we're talking about, we're talking April 97.
Okay.
Betsy Wade of, I'm assuming it's Deseret News.
All right.
She wrote, quote, in August 1995, the government required airlines to inspect identification for any passenger checking luggage. Photo identification was preferred, but two forms of identification were acceptable, so long as one was from a local, state, or federal agency.
Okay.
She also wrote, from the perspective of travel agencies, they had begun issuing notices that customers need to be very intentional about the name that they book their tickets under.
Right.
So before, if your name was John, legally, but you went by Jack, you bought your airline ticket as Jack Smith.
Right.
You would normally just be able to board just fine, because they weren't checking it as seriously.
Right.
But as they started to increase these, travel agencies, where a lot of people were booking a lot of their flights and their vacations and everything through, started having trouble because they would book it under Jack. They'd go to get on the flight and they say, no, you're John. And they were like, yes, I am John and Jack. It's just me.
He is me. We are one.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they were getting denied boarding their flight. So a lot of people were pissed at these travel agencies saying, why the hell didn't you tell us this?
Got it.
So from the travel agency perspective, they kept putting out notices in their itineraries and in all of their contracts.
Needs
you
to match your ID.
You are responsible. You need to be very deliberate in what you're writing for these.
Right. Well, that tracks. And I mean, if what we know about Judy is that she's someone who thinks being on time is being late, it seems like she would be someone who is prepared. But if this is a new change that's coming around the block, then maybe you do forget it. Or you go, oh, I thought I was good because I had the local one, but I forgot I need two.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so while others had it had been optional for a while, then when the government stepped in and said, no, you need to have photo ID, it's not like they got news the way that we, I mean, of course, it was a lot more similar than it was 100 years ago, but they didn't just get the update from their, news app that says, oh, for flying, now we all need real IDs.
Right.
We've had 5 years to do that. There are still people that are going to go to fly and don't have their passport on them and say, what the hell do I do?
Yeah.
Because you need I don't even know if you can do it with I think you need the real ID. There will still be people that do that. And we have done everything to let people know.
For a long time.
So think of it back then. This is relatively new. It's been a matter of months, maybe a year or two.
Right.
I don't know if she flew a lot. Maybe she didn't know. Maybe she still thought it was optional. Maybe she didn't have the photo one. Maybe she only had something else.
Right.
So while someone's like, her friend's like, I think she deliberately did that. It's very possible. She would know her more than I would. But also kind of digging into when those laws and the rules kind of came up, like I always thought, oh, it was post 9/11.
Right.
Well, a lot of those really started budding in the 90s and then really took off.
Yeah.
When the attacks happened. So it matters.
Of course.
So I know, very wordy way of telling you, but I think it's important for knowing that if this only came into effect in like 95 and this is early 97, I can absolutely see thinking you could get on the plane without it.
Yeah.
Realizing you can't and needing to go home.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm just thinking about like her deliberately needing space. I mean, I think you can need space and not disappear.
Right, but saying like, well, she just didn't want to fly with him.
Right.
But it's like, then why go on the trips? Just stay home.
Right. Because it's a conference room. He's at work, which means she's getting that space anyway. So if you're, and okay, I know that being together 10 years doesn't mean automatically that your marriage is like roses and mm-hmm. unicorns shooting rainbows. I get that. But I would assume if they'd been together that long and still seemed like happily newlywed when they got married, that it would be, I'd be hard pressed to be like, we're at a point right now where you're not even going to tell them you want to go take a trip down to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It's odd.
It just doesn't add up. And if we go with the friend's theory, right, that they didn't get along as well as maybe everybody else thought, and maybe she wanted space. I just imagine that if she needed space from him for a few days, he could just go to the conference.
Yeah.
Sans Judy.
Or like, go to the cocktail hour. Sans Judy. Like, they didn't have to meet up for all of that.
Like, why spend the money to fly down and do all of that? And wouldn't that have arguably have been more of a break than just flying separately and getting together that night?
Right.
But then I won't say, because of what we know about domestic violence, is that she might not have had a choice if that what it was, despite needing a break. That being said, there is absolutely no report whatsoever of any domestic violence or abuse.
Yeah.
And most of the people closest to her said that there were no problems and that they didn't think he did this. We've got no reason to believe that he forced her to go with him. But again, as a true crime podcaster and as an anxious girly and like analytical thinker, I'm looking at all of the different possibilities. Right. I could see why she might not want to go. And then she really tried to bring flowers to like submit to him.
Yeah.
When she got there, like, I'm so sorry I did this because I defied you when I ruined you. You know what I mean? Like trying to make it up to him. It's possible, but I don't think so.
Nothing else that he has done really gives that energy to me, that it's like a power and control tactic.
Exactly. Again,
not impossible. I could see the flowers being like a consolation gift or, you know, something to sort of placate. But other than that, there's nothing that, and I mean, even that, like, right, that's a, I could see it. It doesn't scream it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
exactly.
So it's just, it's really fascinating. And then you think about her getting down to North Carolina. To me, that's the question in this. Did she go there willingly or did she get taken there?
Big questions.
Yeah.
And I agree with you because there's so many questions. Like I told you, this, like half of this episode is like, here are the questions that we don't have answers to.
Right.
Here are the theories. Like another theory, again, still is that Jeff did it.
Right.
And diving more into that, I think that theory falls flat on its face because his whereabouts are accounted for.
Right.
For the day that she went missing. And where her body was found, and this is something that is sad but very true, is that he was a morbidly obese man.
Okay.
Very much not healthy. Where her body was found in this forest was like thick brush, very difficult terrain to navigate. The likelihood of him being able to navigate it himself, very slim chances.
Right.
The thought of him being able to do that in the heat in North Carolina, slim chances. the thought of him trying to bring her body there and bury it, very slim chances. Also, partially buried. So did he have a shovel on him, supposedly, if you subscribe to this theory? So there's a lot of like moving parts there.
Well, and then I also ask, where does he have the fucking time?
Yep.
Between what speaking at the conference, what cab ride, his kids coming out there to see him, the police working with him, and then him having to go home and, oh, continuously faxing things down. Not for nothing. I know I have said in the past that not everybody we talk about is the brightest bulb in the box, but I do not think most people we talk about are specifically dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they are specifically dumb enough to send down a missing persons flyer to the exact state that they murdered someone in.
Mm-hmm.
So, or I mean, maybe not dumb, but even cocky. I don't see either of those two being the case here. So the logistics don't really seem to work out. I don't understand the motive.
Mm-hmm.
Because then just break up.
Yeah, because why? And why would you travel together? Again, not that that hasn't happened and we haven't seen it plenty of times.
Yeah, but, you know, where there's no other accounts of, like, violence or power and control or, like, as far as I know from what you've shared, there's no reports of him having an anger issue or a temper problem.
There's nothing that I found. Her kids didn't say, like, we hate this guy.
Right.
Like, friends and family were supportive of them, happy they'd been together a decade already. Yeah. Like, they were doing fine. It seems.
Yes.
And again, everything is alleged.
From all the information we have, I don't put a lot of weight in the Jeff did it basket. It just doesn't make sense to me in any of the realms of why someone would or could.
It doesn't seem possible that he could physically do it. It also, like, there's another theory, and by theory I mean this very loosely, as in like a Reddit thread.
Okay.
But it exists, so I'll talk about it. But someone thinks that, oh, maybe it was a hit. Like, he hired somebody to do it because he could have an alibi and he could have done all the things that he did and feel confident that it wouldn't come back to him.
That is perhaps the only explanation I would go with for that.
That includes him, but I still don't. I think it's so much more likely it's somebody else.
And I will say, again, I don't believe that he did. The only thing that would make me think he could have a say in this is specifically a blue backpack. If he knows everybody's out looking for a red one and he said, switch it to blue.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, it's even that, it's like, okay, that's one way my imagination could make sense of him being involved and an obscure detail.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. That's all I got.
It just, to me, it doesn't seem very credible.
Right.
There is another theory that suggests a man named Gary Hilton killed her. Now, this man is a killer.
Okay.
Like, he's already been convicted.
Okay.
And what ties him supposedly very loosely, like with a dotted line, to Judy's case, is that he apparently murdered an elderly couple in that national forest.
Okay.
And one of the bodies was found like a mile or two away from where Judy's remains were found.
Okay.
But this was 10 years after Judy was killed.
Oh.
So we've got quite the space there. And if the only connection, from what I can find, it is the only connection, is that it was in the same national forest, in a rough, I guess, estimate of like where Judy's body was found to where one of the victims. They think that could have been like a dumping ground of his.
Okay.
But to my knowledge, nothing else has been found. And if that's the only link you have, I think it's a very shitty one.
Right.
Well, not hanging my hat on it, but it is possible. A lot of things are possible because we know next to nothing.
Right. Yeah, you can't count it out, but I certainly don't have a lot of weight to make me want to count it in.
Exactly.
Yeah. A geographical closeness 10 years apart doesn't necessarily make me think much about it.
Mm-mm.
It makes me think honestly of like the Adnan Syed case where Haman Lee, her body was found in a forest that's literally like riddled with bodies because so many people use it as a dumping grounds. that I was like, oh, it's just the elements. Like, it's just somebody saying, okay, this is an okay place because it's desolate and mm-hmm. and wild.
Exactly. Which, and that's possible. And
right. Which, yeah, I go back and forth on that. Like, it's a national park. There's national park murders everywhere because they're national parks. But also, I don't know, a couple hundred yards away, a mile away, whatever. It's a pretty small section of a national park. So I could see that being a dumping ground too.
And also, like, national forests are protected and the people generally don't live there.
Right.
So, like, you do not have to worry about neighbors or a community or things like that that are going to see. There's a reason why people like being alone there. But there's also people that go to do things that they need to be alone to do.
Right.
And a lot of them can be criminal. So it's worth pointing out, but mm-hmm. I don't really put a lot of weight in any of these camps.
Yeah.
So far, it kind of seems like she went to North Carolina willingly.
Okay.
Which is so odd because why would she leave and not tell him? Like, was she just going to go for a couple days and like meet him in New Jersey? He didn't know that.
Right.
But it does seem, if you believe Joanne, that she was in that store, like shopping around.
Yeah.
And that she was coherent and with it. So she wasn't like confused. She didn't seem scared. She wasn't with anybody.
Right.
You'd think if she was kidnapped, you might assume that someone would walk in the store with her. She was, every sighting of her, she's alone.
Okay.
There's a sighting of her in a car they believe she rented, alone. There's beliefs of her looking disoriented, walking around, alone. There's this theory that she walked into that store and talked to Joanne. She's alone.
Okay.
And she didn't do this to herself. So
right.
There is somebody we're missing here. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's like, so me specifically, right? We talked about the kinds of people that call in with tip lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I keep thinking about, if you haven't listened to our John List series, go ahead and listen to it. But the paranoid people.
Mm-hmm.
The people that call in, they say, okay, well, I saw a green handbag on the bench and you said her favorite color was green. Is this related? And they're people that want to help,
mm-hmm.
but that they're grasping at straws.
Yep.
I almost wonder, and the first thing that came to my mind, I don't know why, but the first thing that came is maybe instead of this being a made up for 15 minutes of fame or even really having Judy be nonchalant, is what if it was misread social cues? What if she was terrified? Mm-hmm. And it was like, hi, my husband works in Boston. We're supposed to be in Philadelphia.
Like, my name is Judy. My yes. husband's name is Jeff.
Right. And that's just a social cue that got overlooked.
I didn't even think of that. I think that's so possible.
Because other than that, I mean, listen, listen, I'm from the Midwest. I get a yap. All right. I got a high appetite. But why am I going to go into a store and tell you my husband's name and profession, where he's from, and where we are supposed to be on vacation if I'm not there?
It's very possible.
My fear and my anxious girly thoughts say my biggest question and my biggest unknown is it willingly? Is she going to North Carolina willingly? Because that's going to tell me how the person got introduced. Most likely, right? If she's there willingly, maybe she's meeting somebody up, like meeting up with someone and they turn out to be unsafe. Maybe someone takes advantage of the fact that she's alone and confused. But if it's someone that, you know, took her there, I think more like concern for trafficking, which would also make sense why she's not really being seen with people outside. Like, mm-hmm. they're not going to put their face next to hers on a camera.
Exactly.
And I hope not. You know what I mean? I hope that for whatever this mystery was, and clearly the tragedy that happened, it was the least amount of pain and the least amount of terror that she could experience. But it is so confusing how we get from, okay, I love you, I'll see you at 5. I'm going to go on a tour bus, to stabbed states away.
600 miles away. Body not found until 5 months later.
Right. $33 spent?
It just doesn't add up. And she's wearing clothes that she was not seen in.
Right.
Like, not last seen in. And I don't know what Joanne saw her wearing when she went into the store, supposedly.
Yeah.
So there is a lot there. I think a lot of people think she went there willingly. Mm-hmm. Maybe she thought it wouldn't take so long, or like she'd call once she got there to say, I just had to check this out.
Yeah.
But as far as we know, she never made contact again. He left that morning to go to the conference thinking he'd see her in a few hours, and he never saw his wife again.
Right.
Now, whether you believe he played a role in it or not, that's, I mean, you got to consider that. I don't think so.
Right.
But he had no intention of that being the last time he saw the woman that he married, the woman that he loved, the woman he'd spent a decade with. And I think the sightings, you could put weight in them. Some of them, yeah. I imagine a few have to be credible.
Yeah.
Probably more people saw her that didn't report her, didn't know to.
And she does. She looks like your mom. She looks like your aunt.
She's everybody. Very friendly, very sweet. She is a mom. She's a nurse. She's talkative. She's kind and loving, but she's also fiercely independent because she had been for so long that a solo trip might have sounded fun to her. And it didn't mean she wanted to like get away from her husband. Maybe she just
thought it was fun.
Enjoyed
right
having some time, and he's busy all day. What's he going to care if I spend a night or two away?
Right.
Worth talking about.
Worth considering. That's so fascinating. Oh, I'm going to chew on this for a while. I feel like I am craving more information. And I know that's the hardest part of these, is that there's usually just nothing else out there.
I don't like leaving episodes where there's no closure, because at least we try to find the good in something, and we try to say, okay, here's what we know happened. This is what we can learn from.
Right.
Because so much of us true crime girlies, and I know you, dear listener, are true crime girly. All the gays, theys, everything included, like everyone, DM, yes. Everyone's a true crime girly. And I just think that there's a part of us that listens to this because there's a comfort in knowing what could happen, and there's a comfort in feeling like it prepares you for it.
Right.
And in this, I know so little, it just seems like someone was plucked away.
Yeah.
And then found dead. And there is so little concrete to fill in the blanks that it is almost more unsettling because you just don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about this case or that case with these motives and these signs that something was wrong, and you think about the red flags to look out for, or, you know, this specific kind of sketchy behavior to say, ooh, okay, maybe I'll keep my eyes peeled for that so I feel a little more in control of something entirely out of my control. Mm-hmm. Right? What's that fucking, it's like a Frozen quote where Olaf is like, we call this trying to control what we can when everything is out of our control, or whatever that is. It's that. And in this case, it's so hard to do because there is a definitive beginning and a definitive end, and there is no equation in the middle to get there. It is all variables. It is your algebra worst nightmare. You're dyslexic. You don't have any pants. It's test day, and you've never stepped foot in this class. This is the algebra we're looking at.
And you forgot your calculator. You don't have your TI-84, whatever the hell.
Yes. And you only have a ballpoint ink pen that your teacher's going to scream at you for, and you also miss lunch.
I'm getting the sweats right now. This is stressful. Yeah, but seriously, like there is so little concrete in this. It's concrete that she was in Philly on that day. She woke up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's concrete that she ended up in North Carolina
5 months later.
That's what we know. Was she killed up in the National Forest? Was she just buried there?
Yeah.
Be kind of hard to lug somebody through all that, regardless of your how physically well you are. You could run into other people. They're going to see you carrying a body. You kidding me?
Right. You think they're not going to go, what's in the bag?
She was wearing hiking clothes. Was she going for a hike? She had winter clothes in her backpack, right. If that backpack belonged to her. And maybe she wanted to camp out. Did she see something she shouldn't have seen?
Right.
And someone killed her? Did she just happen upon the wrong person or people?
Wrong time? Someone else having a mental health crisis or a crisis of their own?
Why would they then not take money?
Belongings, yeah.
It just seems like killing someone for the sake of killing someone.
Yeah. And typically,
there's always a reason.
Yeah, when you see stuff, not stuff like this, but like when you see crimes like this, I think crime of passion, right? Like, you're not in it to take anything. You clearly, like, I don't know, there's no sightings of them together. So it seems unlikely that it would be a relational issue. And I mean, if she saw something she wasn't meant to see, then that would really be the only thing that makes sense to get rid of a witness to get rid of a witness. But then also, if you're doing something you shouldn't be, why are we drawing the moral line at stealing her ring?
Mm-hmm. But like, you have her ID.
Right.
Hi.
Mia came by to say that she thinks this is totally screwed up.
Mia just headbutted the microphone. I don't think you heard it, but
it was there. Hi, sweetie.
But she agrees. She's very, very confused, very perplexed over this case. And she wants to roundtable some theories with us as well.
She's appalled at this behavior.
As far as we know, Judy had no enemies. And she did not know anybody there. I think it was said that, like, in that area or in that state, Jeff had gone to some weight loss thing before and he had, like, stayed there.
Okay.
And she might have gone to visit him or dropped him off there or something. So maybe they'd been to North Carolina, like, one other time.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't have family there or friends or anyone that she'd be visiting. So it's really like a, like, throwing a dart at a map of how she would go there and right. why. Again, we don't think that it was robbery for all the ways that we've talked about. You can analyze her at the airport and think she forgot her ID on purpose or accidentally or somewhere in between. You can right. look at so much we can't ask her. And unfortunately, Jeff died in 2005.
Oh my gosh.
Never having gotten closure to what happened to his wife.
That's awful.
Her children, Amy and Craig, still live with the wound of losing their mother and having no answers. Her daughter, Amy, said something that like broke my heart in the interview that she sat for. And she said that her mom and her would talk about one day, like, her having kids. And she became emotional just saying that she had never considered that her mom wouldn't be around for it.
Aww.
Like, it was just, of course she'll be there. It's my mom.
Right.
And of course, you know, my kids will be there. It's my kids. And she was robbed of that. That didn't happen. And right. in this bizarre, seemingly violent way, she's just ripped away. It's like your mom went on a trip and she didn't come home.
Right.
And she was found in a place she didn't go on the trip to go to. So yeah. very confusing, very perplexing. And ultimately, Judy's life was lost and we don't know what happened. Whoever did it is not paying for that.
Right.
And her husband had to die without knowing. You know, I believe one of her parents outlived her, which is awful. So one of her parents had to bury a child and had 5 months of not knowing what happened to that child. I don't care that she was 50. She's someone's baby.
Yeah. That's so... It's so hard. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if this relates to anybody else. I have not yet had the pleasure or curse of having this happen to me, but I heard for a while about this sort of phenomenon about how invisible maternal middle-aged women become,
mm-hmm.
right? Like sort of this notion that, okay, well, your maternal, your mom figure, your middle-aged, like that's it. Like just sort of boxing that in.
Mm-hmm.
And for nothing else, like if for nothing else, I love that she was independent, that she liked to go do things on her own and be adventurous and have her own fun. It sounds like she was more than capable of taking care of herself and others at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that she was able to be a mom and such a wonderful caregiver. And that's such a hard person to lose, because you're losing it, yes, for her entire family, which that is a deep wound, but also for all of the people she's helped before and all the people she won't help that she would have otherwise. And unfortunately, I think this kind of plays a role here in my brain of like, okay, well, she was a 50-year-old maternal looking woman.
Yeah,
she doesn't have bright blue hair to point out on the bus.
But she's also easily dismissible because, again, like you said, right. that population of women is very easily disregarded.
Yes.
In the workplace, their role in society, like you quote unquote did your job already, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like they're neglected. They're not treated well. Healthcare sucks. Like
healthcare sucks.
There are so many different ways where I think those women are forgotten about. And I don't mean like those. Hey, I'm going to get there too. We all are. You know what I mean? It's like it's easy to say it when you're young and you blink and I'm part of the club, and that can be a shitty club if people right. aren't acknowledged or taken care of better. And so I think it's awesome that she was doing all that stuff, and it just sucks that she was taken away, and there's just, we've got nothing. There's nothing. Right. There are so many questions. Half of this episode is posing questions.
Well, and I think that's the thing, right? Like, for not for all of the same reasons, but overlapping so many of the reasons that she is such a bright light are so many of the reasons that we have so many of these questions. She wasn't standing out at the grocery store where someone's like, oh, she was behaving weird, or I noticed she looked really young to be in this store. You know what I mean? Like, there's none of that sort of off the cuff, you look at someone and think they're not supposed to be there. She is totally fine to be there. She mm-hmm. looks totally normal. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Being quote unquote normal and pegged as quote unquote normal in society is such a blessing and a curse when it comes to these questions.
Yep.
Was that woman her, or was it somebody else with the same haircut?
Mm-hmm.
Was it the unhoused woman? Like, you know, all of
these.
And
we know what memory and, you know, people's recollection of what people look like.
Yeah.
I mean, how much that changes. Yeah, I thought I saw her. It could look nothing like her. But in that 3 seconds you may have looked, and the way it was coded in your brain, maybe
now
it did.
You're convinced. Yeah.
So it just, it poses a lot of questions. Unfortunately, we're no closer to answers to my knowledge.
Ugh.
I would love to see that happen. I know a lot of people are pushing for things to try to get some kind of resolution to this. But unfortunately, this is where we are now.
Well, if you guys know anything, obviously say something. We say that every time. I don't think our ATFTC fam is sitting on secrets, but if you are, it's just better to have it out there for all of the closure. I am sure that we will have any information you can give in our info box below if that's still up and running. If you did want to see the people, the places, the things that we're talking about today, please go to our Instagram. It is a great little place to be. Allie does a great job running it. We've got little highlights with memes and reprieves and silly goofy ha-has.
Yeah.
And resources and numbers for you to call if you want something, or causes that victims' families care about. And like I said, you got all the people, all the places, all the things we talk about for every episode. You can go down, they're labeled. You can see what Judy looked like. You can see the places that we might have seen her. Who knows? Whatever we got, you got. But in a similar note, you can also see all of our sources down below. Same thing. And if you clicked on that little link tree, you could leave us, like, I don't know, a follow, a comment. You could rate us 5 stars everywhere you listen. And I mean everywhere. That would be so cool. If you like what we do and you think someone else would, that helps it get to them too. Because I promise we have told literally everyone we know about it.
Yes, we did.
So at this point, we love anything that you guys do to help. Anything you do to interact, we are just obsessed with you. And we would love your pod pets if you send them over Instagram or email.
Yeah, get on that, please, because I live for that shit.
If you could. But it seems like you have a lot to do now on your to-do list, so we gotta go give you something to spend your week doing. If I do take a look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye. Bye. Bye.